Justice Radio Station, Social Issues App.
With you today, but I have an illness in my family that kept me at home. I want to congratulate Minister Farrakhan on the 20th anniversary of the Million Men March and also thank the minister for having me here to speak to you today. Minister Farrakhan has asked me to address the issue of vaccines and African American and vaccine safety. I want to start out by saying this, and I want to say it emphatically. I am pro-vaccine. I've always been fiercely pro-vaccine. I had all six of my children vaccinated, and I believe that we ought to have policies that encourage full vaccination for all Americans. But to accomplish that goal, we need a honest regulatory agency, we need a transparent process, and we need vaccines that all of us know are safe, are the safest possible vaccines that we can have. We do not have those things today. There have been four separate studies by the federal government, by the United States Congress, a three-year study, a one-year study by the United States Senate, a study in 2008 by the Inspector General of HHS, and a study last year by the Office of Research Integrity, and all of those studies have said the same thing. They've said that the vaccine division at CDC is a cesspool of corruption. The reason for that is because of financial conflicts of interest between people who work at the vaccine division and the vaccine industry. And you ask how this happened, and I'll tell you. In 1986, Congress, having accepted millions of dollars of vaccine industry money, of pharma industry money, passed a law that made it illegal for any American to sue a vaccine company, no matter how dangerous the vaccine, no matter how sick the person got, no matter how reckless or negligent the company was, you can't sue them. And that emboldened the industry, and it emboldened the regulatory agency. It suddenly made vaccines immensely profitable. So when I was a little boy, I got five vaccines. My children got 69 vaccines. How did all these new vaccines happen? They began happening after Congress passed that law in 1989. All of these new vaccines came on the schedule, and many of them were not properly tested, and they had mercury in them. The mercury was 1,000 times more neurotoxic than lead. And you know what lead does to a child's brain. Well, this is far more toxic. In fact, and most of the mercury has been taken out of the children's vaccines today. But it still remains in the flu vaccines that is being given to your children and to pregnant women. And the amounts of mercury in those vaccines are hundreds of times, in some cases thousands of times, what a little child's brain can take. So the message I would leave with you today is that before you take your vaccine, ask your doctor and make sure that there is no mercury in that vaccine. You know, in the multi-dose vials of vaccine, if a doctor drops that bottle on the floor and it breaks, that legally he is obligated to evacuate the building, bring in a hazmat crew with moon suits and respirators, and clean up that bottle. So why? It's illegal to dispose of it into a sewer system. So why would you give that same substance to an infant child or a pregnant woman? And the problem is, with African Americans, the vaccines that have the mercury in them tend to end up in your communities. Now, in 1972, my uncle, Senator Edward Kennedy, ended the Tuskegee experiment. which many of you have heard about. The Tuskegee experiment was a 40-year experiment that CDC conducted by allowing Black African Americans who had syphilis to not be treated, to lie to them about their disease because they wanted to see what would happen when during the progression of that disease until you died from it. So these people that they were experimenting on gave the syphilis to their wives, they gave it to their children, and they died of it themselves. And there was a whistleblower in CDC who was also African American. Nobody would listen to him. Nobody in Congress, nobody in the Senate, nobody in the press. And he went to my uncle, Senator Edward Kennedy, and my uncle held hearings on the Tuskegee experiment and shut it down. And we passed legislation promising it would never happen again. And Bill Clinton, when he was president, apologized to the victims of the Tuskegee experiment and promised we will never do experimentation on African Americans again. Well, guess what? In August of last year, another CDC whistleblower came forward, Dr. William Thompson, the senior scientist at CDC's vaccine division. And Dr. Thompson said that he handed 100,000 pages of incriminating documents over to Congress. And he said on tape and in deposition that he and all of the scientists in CDC vaccine division have been ordered for 10 years to lie to the public about the connection between autism and vaccines, and particularly mercury in vaccines. And one of the things he said specifically, he talked about a study that he was one of the authors on in 2004, and there were four authors, including Frank DiStefano, the branch chief at CDC. And when they were doing that study, they were looking at the impact of a certain vaccine, of the MMR vaccine, on children, all kinds of children, including African-American children. And what he found was that the children who were, what the data showed, what the scientists found, was that the children who received that vaccine on time, in other words, younger than 36 months, younger than 3 years, had a 240% greater chance of getting autism than the children who waited a little. Only African American children were affected. And what they got into a room and they saw what this data said. They saw that it said that it proved that these vaccines, these mercury vaccines particularly, were causing autism. And they said, we cannot allow this to get out. So they ordered a trash can into that room and they dumped all of the documents into the trash can about African American boys. And for 14 years, they have continued to lie to the public about what this study said and about what they saw. Until this whistleblower, who was one of the authors of the study and who was conscience-stricken, came forward in August and said, I want to confess, I want to go to Congress, I want Congress to subpoena me and let me tell my story about the corruption at CDC and what it is doing to African Americans. You know, that if CDC had come forward at the time when they learned this data was true, they could have saved 100,000 African American boys from getting autism. But they decided to maintain their silence. And now on October 24th of this year, we are having, and Minister Farrakhan is helping to co-sponsor, a march on the CDC headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. And I want to invite all of you here to come and attend that march and march on CDC and ask that the whistleblower story be allowed to be told. And write your congressman, particularly your African-American caucus congressman, and tell them, we want Bill Thompson subpoenaed before Congress, because Congress won't subpoena him. Why? Because the number one lobbying donor to Congress today is the pharmaceutical industry. And they have our congressmen on puppet strings. And they've captured the agency that's supposed to protect us and supposed to ensure a safe vaccine supply. They've captured the politicians. They're the number one advertiser on the press, so the press won't talk about it. They will call me anti-vaccine. And you know I'm not anti-vaccine. Anybody who tells you I'm anti-vaccine, you know that person is lying, because I have never said anything anti-vaccine. I've been against mercury in fish for 30 years. I've been suing the coal companies to stop them from putting mercury in fish, and nobody's ever called me anti-fish. And I'm not anti-vaccine either. I just want vaccines that don't have mercury in them. And the African American community is disproportionately injured by these vaccines, and particularly boys are injured. We cannot afford to lose any more African American boys. African American boys are already endangered by violence, by state-sponsored violence, by police violence, by violence in their own communities. We cannot afford to be hurting them and killing them with mercury in our vaccines. The message is get the mercury out so that we can take vaccines and make sure they're safe. Please join me in Atlanta on October 24th.
Wondering whether or not the conscious community is actually emulating the exact same people who they claim to despise. I got to say this because as we go into the new year, everything has to be under analysis. I look at how a second ago a lot of our sisters didn't even feel comfortable enough to demand a seat. There's something wrong when a black woman don't even feel that I'm worthy of sitting down while so many black men sit. And that's not the fault of the brothers necessarily, but there's something going on in the community where we don't really feel like community no more. Brothers and sisters, we always talk about once upon a time we used to look out for each other. We used to talk about once upon a time how the next door neighbor could punish me if I didn't do what I was supposed to do. But once upon a time, we were a community. The problem with once upon a time is that the European, with our support, has engineered a process by which most black people live their lives under a philosophy of radical individualism. I think we practice radical individualism more than the Jew. I think we practice radical individualism more than the Anglo-Saxon. I think we practice radical individualism more than any of the other groups who we claim to hate so much. We talk black, but that's the easy part. We dress black, but that's the easy part. We study black, but that's the easy part. I think some of us have gotten comfortable with the cultural Halloween costumes we wear. I think that some of us think that because I burn my incense and because I wear my shea butter, and I think because some of us have been to Africa and read some books and took some trips, because we've gained a degree of knowledge and information we think that transforms us from slave to free man. Well, I got news for you, brothers and sisters. Information does not cease to make you a slave. Knowledge of your history alone is not sufficient to replace slavery. I'm a student of 19th century black history. And when you study a lot of our enslaved ancestors, you will find that they knew exactly who they were. You will find that a lot of them knew African language. You will find that some of them had knowledge of classical African civilization that would rival almost any scholar we have today. They were not all ignorant, but yet and still they remain enslaved. So then, if information does not transfer you out of slavery, what does? If reading the books doesn't stop your servitude, what does? If knowing where you come from doesn't change the relationship between you and white people, what does? And the answer to that question is power. We suffer what we suffer because we are not organizing and utilizing our power. The relationship between black people and white people is based on a power dynamic. Just like the relationship between a man and a woman is based on a power dynamic. The relationship between a parent and a child, a boss and an employee is a power dynamic. So if the information doesn't stop the slavery, and power does. And power is normally wielded through, yielded through institutions. As long as African people own no institutions, you will always be a damn slave. I want to be clear. Because some of us have gotten so comfortable with the culture that it's become another religion. Some of us have gotten so cold comfortable with the information that it's become another vehicle of escapism.
That is spirit now.
See, there's nothing wrong with the culture. We need it. It's who we are. There's nothing wrong with the spirituality. We need it. Nothing wrong with the stones and the healing and all the things we do. We need it. But please don't mistake it for freedom. And what I see black people doing is, rather than overcoming white supremacy, we are succumbing to white supremacy by simply making it more comfortable to exist within it. Brothers and sisters, all we did is what the church did, and that is, don't transform your reality, just make it a little bit more bearable. I would argue to you right now that most of us as African people, and I'm speaking globally, most of us don't have a problem with white folk. We don't have a problem with white supremacy. We don't have a problem with white racism. No, we don't. Because when people really have a problem with how they're being treated, they do something about it. Which is why I argue we don't have a conscious community per se. We have a learned community. Because once one truly becomes conscious, behavior follows that awakening. So if you claim to be conscious and you ain't done shit to change your situation, you ain't as conscious as you think you are. But let me go a little bit further. When people come in for therapy, right? I'm a therapist. People come to therapy, they're conscious that they're an alcoholic. They're conscious they're on crack. They're conscious they're depressed. They're conscious they're anxious. They're conscious they have bipolar. They're conscious of their anxiety problems. But just knowing that you're sick don't mean a damn thing unless you're going to transform the sickness into health. Are y'all following me now? So when we say we are conscious, are we bragging about the fact we know we're sick, we know about the sickness, but we don't care enough about it to do something about it? Information does not change the unconscious program upon which we operate. I could put a laptop computer up here, put a flash drive in it, with all negative information about African people. Take the negative flash drive out, put one with all positive information about African people. But the computer will continue to run the way it's been running, because the central processing unit will take the data, positive or negative, and use it as a weapon of destruction. You see the same thing amongst the learned community. Everything we learn, we use it to fight somebody else with it. Every ideology, every religious persuasion becomes cause for combat. That's no different than a gang on a corner. See, until you deactivate the Willie Lynch chip, which is in the subconscious, you don't change Negroes into free people. In fact, let me go a step further with you. When we talk about properly educating African children, I think we miss the central importance of education, which is not education. Schools do not primarily exist to educate. The primary purpose of education is socialization. Your son can't read, but he know the Star Spangled Banner. Your daughter can't count, but she can name all the presidents of the United States of America. They don't know nothing about Obama, but they love him. Because the socialization is more powerful than the education. The education is the information, but socialization teaches the people how to think, how to act, and how to feel. You can teach black children all day long whatever you want, but until you socialize them, until you re-socialize our children, until you change the way black people spend, they can study ancient African civilization all day and still go to the Chinese store. I want to deal with it because this is our ancestors' year here. 2015 is 150 years. Our ancestors are saying, I know y'all can do better than this, because we did better with less. Harry Tubman said, wait a minute. What do y'all mean y'all can't stop police brutality in New York City? Do you realize we stopped the whole damn slavery machine? George Washington Carver says, what do you mean you can't live without the white man's medications? When I transformed not only pharmacology, but agricultural science.
Democracy versus justice. Democracy versus democracy versus justice. Democracy versus justice.